This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Joining me from Singapore is author Gurtej Singh Khalsa, and I welcome him to the program to discuss the book that he has written titled Rajni. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
You have a 348-page book. My understanding, your background perhaps has some connection with India, and this book, 348 pages at least, is a fictional account of a character or of a story. Tell me a little more about Rajni.
Well, it is based on a story from Sikh history. I'm a Sikh, which is a religion that began in northern India in the latter part of the 15th century. Sikhs are all over the world now. They're distinguished, very recognizable because of their beards and turbans. Not to be confused with Muslims who tie a different style turban, but Sikhs are very, very distinctive with their turban styles and their beards. So I actually, when I was 17, I got interested in yoga. When I was 19, I actually met a master who was also a Sikh. His name was Yogi Bhajan. And from him, I learned Kundalini Yoga, but I also learned about the teachings of the Sikhs. And at the age of 19, I converted and became a Sikh and have been practicing both Kundalini Yoga and following the Sikh teachings since that time. The book, Rajni, is taken from Sikh history. It's based on a traditional story, and the book is a sort of a combination of tradition, some mythology perhaps, legend, and actual historical events and historical characters.
Did you have to do a lot of research to get the historical events correct in your book, or was that a side issue to the story that you created?
No, actually, when I first started writing it, I spent a lot of time because I wanted to be sure that it was accurate historically. That was something that was very important to me. And at the same time, I didn't want to make it just a dry historical, you know, history book. So because it was and is a novel. So I spent a lot of time doing research to get the history right. And actually, the very first draft of the book went to a group of Sikh scholars in India because I wanted to be sure that it was correct and that I had the historical aspects correct. They liked it so much that they published it. And here's the funny thing. This was a first draft, so it was, you know, a pretty skeletal version of the story. Characters were not developed, and in addition to that, there were many grammatical mistakes, typos, and they published the thing with all of the mistakes and in the polishing process made other mistakes. I never saw the galleys, and this thing came out. In fact, one of the historians even added her name as a co-author.
Really?
So that was kind of funny.
Was it published in English in India?
Yeah, it was published in English because the book is written in English.
Correct.
And it was published in English, and I got that stop. But some people actually read it and made their way through all of the errors and liked it a lot. I was even contacted by a Bollywood producer whose wife had read it and wanted him to make it into a film starring her. So,
oh, wow. That's amazing.
But I was, you know, the book was far from being ready to take that step and really wasn't nearly ready for wide release. So I continued to work on it, and it actually took me, I did the first draft in a few months, and then to get it from that point to actually being published as it is now took another 17 years.
17 years.
Yeah.
Incredible journey. The basic concept of your book, it is fictional, but who is your main character, and what is the journey that he or she is pursuing?
Well, Rajni is a historical character. There's some who say that it's just a fable, but there's sufficient evidence that shows that she actually lived. There's not a lot that's known about her, but she was a girl, was born into a Hindu family. Her father was a Raja of an area in northwestern India. And this is, of course, before partition, so there was no such thing as Pakistan at that time. And her father was this Raja. He was also a revenue collector for the emperor, the Sultan of India at that time. And he was a devout Hindu, but he only had daughters, which in those days was, kind of for some people it was disgraceful because sons were so important, but right. He valued his daughter, all of his daughters, treated them well. They all had their own servants, their own pundits who taught them. And an important part of the story is Rajni's dialogue with her pundit who teaches her as she grows through life. When she was at the age of 14, she defied her father. Now, peripheral to her story is also the evolution of the Sikhs. And the story begins with a bit of mythology, and the narrator of the book is God. So that lends an element of humor, and I don't know if you're familiar with the book. I think it's called Heaven Knows or God Knows by Joseph Heller, where David is narrating the book. And or rather Solomon, I think. I'm losing it now.
Well, that's okay. Well, somebody
anyway,
from
but it's
from
sort of Roger, along those lines. So as the story evolves, the narrator, God, referred to as a Kalpurukh, makes comments and observations, which you just give an interesting element to the story. Anyway, so. Prior to Rajni actually doesn't appear in the book until about midway through it.
Interesting.
There's some discussion of her early on, but the early part of the book is about the beginning of the Sikh Dharma and how that came into be. And in the city of Amritsar in northern India which is considered a sacred place for Sikhs. There was a pool of water that sprung up there, and
that's the healing pool. Is that the one?
Yes. So, the book is really about the water, and the water became recognized and for its miraculous qualities, its healing, because Rajni was forced by her father to marry a disabled leper. He was crippled, and he threw her out because she defied him, and she was forced to carry him around she was told to find the water, so she was trying to find the water. She didn't know where to go, so her experiences doing this, eventually they get to Amritsar, and her husband, without realizing what he's doing, he's actually thinking to drown himself, goes into the water, and a miracle occurs. So that's essentially the story.
That's the foundation for your story. Now, yes. As you began to write this, was this a book that you thought might appeal primarily to Sikhs, or is this going to be one that's going to have a universal appeal?
Well, as I first began writing it, I was thinking that the audience would be primarily Sikhs. But the longer I worked on it, the more I felt that the real message has a much broader appeal. So I made a lot of corrections, actually, in order to be sure that it wasn't too didactic, or, you know, trying to promote the Sikh religion, but simply telling the story. And because it's more a spiritual story than a religious story, and it's also a love story. It's also a historical story. There are a lot of elements to it.
Have you included some action scenes for the guys? I mean, how would you describe it? Is it a narrative style, or is there also some elements of action?
There is some action. There are a few action scenes. They are they're kind of interesting. What happens where Rajani's life is in danger, and how she protects herself, and what that's actually a critical aspect to the story that comes somewhat late in the book, but it's a very important part of the story.
What do you want readers to take away from your book, as far as an underlying theme, message, or idea, or motivation?
Well, I would like readers to, one, find inspiration, to find hope, to believe that, or to recognize that whatever comes in life, that they can get through it, that, you know, there's always, if you just persevere, you can prevail. And also to just be inspired and elevated by the story itself, and, you know, really to find hope, to find inspiration, to find elevation, and perhaps a brighter day.
You have mentioned it took almost 15 years to finally get it to a place that you were comfortable with releasing it. Were there other challenges that you had to overcome, Gersage?
Yeah, there were. There were many, because in order to get it to where it is now, I went through multiple ways of presenting the story. I started it out as just simply a straight narrative. At one point I cut out more than 20,000 words. I mean, there was too much history at one point. There was too much stuff that really was not relevant to the story, and it took a lot of work to really distill what I initially put together down to what was really the story that I wanted to tell.
Creatively, was this inspirational enough on your side that you may want to do either a sequel or do a follow-up book?
Well, in fact, it is the first of a trilogy, and the three books are really about, interestingly, about some of the great women of Sikh history, as sort of a core of the story. But there's a lot more to each one. I actually have started treatments of the two subsequent books, but I think it's important to get these stories out there.
Sounds like you have already begun a process that maybe a Bollywood may be calling your way. Rajani is the name of this book, Rajani, and our author, Gertage Singh Khalsa, has joined me from Singapore. Gertage, where do we get copies of your book?
Well, it's available through Amazon.com. And it's available through the Trafford website as well.
Do you have a website personally, or have you decided to develop one?
Yeah, it's almost developed. I'm just waiting to get the final release on it. The website is www.rajaniofgoldentemple.com.
Fabulous. Thank you for sharing your story, and it's a pleasure talking with you. The connection to Singapore is excellent, so enjoyed the visit today, and look forward to talking to you in the future when the rest of your trilogy gets released. Thank you again for being a part of today's show.
Thank you so much for calling.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Joining me from Singapore is author Gurtej Singh Khalsa, and I welcome him to the program to discuss the book that he has written titled Rajni. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
You have a 348-page book. My understanding, your background perhaps has some connection with India, and this book, 348 pages at least, is a fictional account of a character or of a story. Tell me a little more about Rajni.
Well, it is based on a story from Sikh history. I'm a Sikh, which is a religion that began in northern India in the latter part of the 15th century. Sikhs are all over the world now. They're distinguished, very recognizable because of their beards and turbans. Not to be confused with Muslims who tie a different style turban, but the Sikhs are very, very distinctive with their turban styles and their beards. So I actually, when I was 17, I got interested in yoga. When I was 19, I actually met a master who was also a Sikh. His name was Yogi Bhajan. And from him, I learned Kundalini Yoga, but I also learned about the teachings of the Sikhs. And at the age of 19, I converted and became a Sikh and have been practicing both Kundalini Yoga and following the Sikh teachings since that time. The book, Rajni, is taken from Sikh history. It's based on a traditional story, and the book is a sort of a combination of tradition, some mythology perhaps, legend, and actual historical events and historical characters.
Did you have to do a lot of research to get the historical events correct in your book, or was that a side issue to the story that you created?
No, actually, when I first started writing it, I spent a lot of time because I wanted to be sure that it was accurate historically. That was something that was very important to me. And at the same time, I didn't want to make it just a dry historical, you know, history book. So because it was and is a novel. So I spent a lot of time doing research to get the history right. And actually, the very first draft of the book went to a group of Sikh scholars in India because I wanted to be sure that it was correct and that I had the historical aspects correct. They liked it so much that they published it. And here's the funny thing. This was a first draft. So it was, you know, a pretty skeletal version of the story. Characters were not developed. And in addition to that, there were many grammatical mistakes, typos, and they published the thing with all of the mistakes and in the polishing process made other mistakes. I never saw the galleys, and this thing came out. In fact, one of the historians even added her name as a co-author.
Really?
So that was kind of funny.
Was it published in English in India?
Yeah, it was published in English because the book is written in English.
Correct.
And it was published in English, and I got that stop. But some people actually read it and made their way through all of the errors and liked it a lot. I was even contacted by a Bollywood producer whose wife had read it and wanted him to make it into a film starring her. So,
oh, wow. That's amazing.
But I was, you know, the book was far from being ready to take that step, and really wasn't nearly ready for wide release. So I continued to work on it, and it actually took me I did the first draft in a few months, and then to get it from that point to actually being published as it is now took another 17 years.
17 years.
Yeah.
Incredible journey. The basic concept of your book, it is fictional, but who is your main character, and what is the journey that he or she is pursuing?
Well, Rajni is a historical character. There's some who say that it's just a fable, but there's sufficient evidence that shows that she actually lived. There's not a lot that's known about her, but she was a girl, was born into a Hindu family. Her father was a Raja of an area in northwestern India, and this is, of course, before partition, so there was no such thing as Pakistan at that time. And her father was this Raja. He was also a revenue collector for the emperor, the Sultan of India at that time, and he was a devout Hindu, but he only had daughters, which in those days was for some people it was disgraceful because sons were so important, but right. He valued his daughter, all of his daughters, treated them well. They all had their own servants, their own pundits who taught them. And an important part of the story is Rajni's dialogue with her pundit who teaches her as she grows through life. When she was at the age of 14, she defied her father. Now, peripheral to her story is also the evolution of the Sikhs. And the story begins with a bit of mythology, and the narrator of the book is God. So that lends an element of humor, and I don't know if you're familiar with the book. I think it's called Heaven Knows or God Knows by Joseph Heller, where David is narrating the book. And Solomon, I think. I'm losing it now.
Well, that's okay. Well,
along those lines. So as the story evolves, the narrator, God, referred to as a Kalpurukh, makes comments and observations, which just give an interesting element to the story. Anyway, so. Prior to Rajni actually doesn't appear in the book until about midway through it.
Interesting.
There's some discussion of her early on, but the early part of the book is about the beginning of the Sikh Dharma and how that came into be. And in the city of Amritsar in northern India which is considered a sacred place for Sikhs. There was a pool of water that sprung up there, and
that's the healing pool. Is that the one?
Yes. So, the book is really about the water, and the water became recognized and for its miraculous qualities, its healing, because Rajini was forced by her father to marry a disabled leper. He was crippled. And he threw her out because she defied him, and she was forced to carry him around she was told to find the water, so she was trying to find the water. She didn't know where to go. So her experiences doing this, eventually they get to Amritsar, and her husband, without realizing what he's doing, he's actually thinking to drown himself, goes into the water, and a miracle occurs. So that's essentially the story.
That's the foundation for your story. Now, yes. As you began to write this, was this a book that you thought might appeal primarily to Sikhs, or is this going to be one that's going to have a universal appeal?
Well, as I first began writing it, I was thinking that the audience would be primarily Sikhs. But the longer I worked on it, the more I felt that the real message has a much broader appeal. So I made a lot of corrections, actually, in order to be sure that it wasn't too didactic, or, you know, trying to promote the Sikh religion, but simply telling the story. And because it's more a spiritual story than a religious story, and it's also a love story. It's also a historical story. There are a lot of elements to it.
Have you included some action scenes for the guys? I mean, how would you describe it? Is it a narrative style, or is there also some elements of action?
There is some action. There are a few action scenes. They are they're kind of interesting. What happens where Rajini's life is in danger, and how she protects herself, and what that's actually a critical aspect to the story that comes somewhat late in the book, but it's a very important part of the story.
What do you want readers to take away from your book, as far as an underlying theme, message, or idea, or motivation?
Well, I would like readers to, one, find inspiration, to find hope, to believe that, or to recognize that whatever comes in life, that they can get through it, that, you know, there's always, if you just persevere, you can prevail. And also to just be inspired and elevated by the story itself, and, you know, really to find hope, to find inspiration, to find elevation, and perhaps a brighter day.
You have mentioned it took almost 15 years to finally get it to a place that you were comfortable with releasing it. Were there other challenges that you had to overcome, Gersage?
Yeah, there were. There were many, because in order to get it to where it is now, I went through multiple ways of presenting the story. I started it out as just simply a straight narrative. At one point I cut out more than 20,000 words. I mean, there was too much history at one point. There was too much stuff that really was not relevant to the story, and it took a lot of work to really distill what I initially put together down to what was really the story that I wanted to tell.
Creatively, was this inspirational enough on your side that you may want to do either a sequel or do a follow-up book?
Well, in fact, it is the first of a trilogy, and the three books are really about, interestingly, about some of the great women of Sikh history, as sort of a core of the story. But there's a lot more to each one. I actually have started treatments of the two subsequent books, but I think it's important to get these stories out there.
Sounds like you have already begun a process that maybe a Bollywood may be calling your way. Rajani is the name of this book, R-A-J-N-I, and our author, Gurtej Singh Khalsa, has joined me from Singapore. Gurtej, where do we get copies of your book?
Well, it's available through Amazon.com, and it's available through the Trafford website as well.
Do you have a website personally, or have you decided to develop one?
Yeah, it's almost developed. I'm just waiting to get the final release on it. The website is www.rajaniofgoldentemple.com.
Fabulous. Thank you for sharing your story, and it's a pleasure talking with you. The connection to Singapore is excellent, so enjoyed the visit today, and look forward to talking to you in the future when the rest of your trilogy gets released. Thank you again for being a part of today's show.
Thank you so much for calling.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Love Ya Tree, and the author is Dwayne Robinson, and Dwayne joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Dwayne.
Well, hello, Steve. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. This is really going to touch everybody's heart. This story, The Love Ya Tree, has very special meaning, it personal meaning to you because of the loss of your wife after 28 years to cancer. And also, The Love Ya Tree is based on actually what you did for her during the time before she passed away. So it's got it's kind of a children's fiction story, but it's got big meaning for adults as well, doesn't it?
It sure does, Steve. The story, I think, is geared toward children, but it truly does reach all audiences. And it's really the story of what my son and I did toward the last days of my wife's illness and struggle with cancer. We actually, she was receiving so many cards and letters, and she was an elementary school teacher, and her children were just making all kinds of beautiful tokens, angels, different paper decorations and so forth, and we didn't have any place to display them where my wife could see them all and be encouraged. So my son and I went out on our property and cut down the branchiest, biggest tree that we felt like we could get in our house. And so we brought it in and put all of those decorations on the tree and surprised my wife with the tree on her birthday. And we called it the Love Ya Tree. And it was just such a source of hope and inspiration for her, and just a way for her to really see just how many people loved her and were praying for her, and just the outpouring of her friends and loved ones, you know, as she went through this journey.
And you said you'll never forget the look on her face when she first saw that tree.
Well, it was pretty incredible, actually. You know, the tears started flowing, and she was really, really touched. You know, I think it just completely shocked her to see this huge tree in our living room, and yes. Then just to see, you know, what was on it, and just to be able to appreciate all of the outpouring of love and faith, you know, that people had sent to her. And she was so moved by it that we absolutely had to move her hospice bed into the living room right beside the tree. And that's where she spent her final days, was right beside the Love You tree.
So have you ever wondered what a tree thinks? And so this story is told from the point of view of the tree.
It sure is. Yeah, it's first, I never dreamed that I would ever be authoring a children's book. But through this journey, my wife always wanted to write a children's book, and so I just prayed and asked that, you know, God would open my eyes and heart and show me a way to be able to present our story to other people, you know, that would be honoring to Him and also memorialize my wife. And so the children's book idea came to me, and through some pretty unique circumstances, there was some very unique areas of inspiration that came, and pen hit the paper and the words just flowed, and the Love You Tree was the result.
So it's beautifully illustrated, has a short story, big pictures, a little bit of narration from the tree's point of view, and I love the way you personified the tree.
Well, really, and that was part of the last item of inspiration that I really needed, and it came through one of the hospice workers who took care of my wife. And I shared with the hospice worker that I'd told my wife that when the journey was over, you know, my hope and desire was that my wife would recover. And I told her that I would take some part of the wood from the Love You Tree and make something special for her. And when I shared that with the hospice worker said, well, that's pretty amazing, because I've just taken up the hobby of making fine writing instruments out of exotic woods. And she said, I would love to make some pens for you from some of the wood from the Love You Tree. So that really, helped, spur me on, you know, for the story. But the true inspiration came when she gave me a letter with the pens that a person had written her that she had made a pen for. And the letter was written from the person of the pen. So the pen was writing back saying, thank you for creating me, and, you know, I'm a little awkward in my words, but I'm slowly but surely learning. And as soon as I saw that letter, then immediately I knew that the story had to come from the tree itself. And so that really just helped to bring the entire story into focus for me.
And this tree is really kind of a scraggly tree, but I love the eyes and the eyebrows and the mouth that you put on the tree.
Well, thank you. Yes, it really I can't take credit for how awesome the illustrations are, because the illustrator with Westbow was truly incredible. What I had to do was provide my best stick man renderings of what my mind's eye saw, and the artist at Westbow just did a tremendous job in bringing the Love You Tree to life.
So it's clear that this was written deepest thoughts and feelings about a human family's real life journey through a terminal illness to obviously help others, but at the same time, the tree represents, it's symbolic. The tree is symbolic.
It really is, you know, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Steve, because even if you're blessed enough to not have any circumstance where cancer or terminal illness has impacted your family, there's a great story in the Love You Tree, in that the very least useful tree on our property in terms of having any value for anything is the one that was selected and brought into the house and given the greatest purpose to bring comfort to my wife as she was struggling with her illness. So for anyone who feels like they're just not important or can't seem to find their place in the world, this book could really encourage them that sometimes God has a funny way of taking us misfits and using us in awesome ways.
And we all know someone, may not be in our family, but someone near the family, friends, you know, other business associates. One in three will have cancer?
Absolutely. That's it's a staggering thought, isn't it, Steve?
Really is. Very sobering, but that is reality. So a book like this, written from more of a children's point of view, but at the same time, I'm sure the spirit of it, adults feel the impact.
They really do. And as the book has gained in popularity, I have had an opportunity to do a few book signings, and I'm just in awe of the people who come up to me, you know, adults with just tears streaming down their eyes, and they just pour their heart out to me about their cancer journey. And I'm just so grateful and surprised, actually, that the story is resonating with so many adults.
We all would love the happy ending that she is cured and lives happily ever after with you. That is not the case for most with cancer. And so in this book, you say your favorite illustration. Tell us about it.
Well, there's an illustration, and it's as my wife is dying, and the illustration shows just a beautiful picture of God's hand reaching through our window, right through the branches of the Love You Tree, and taking my wife's hand. And it's just a beautiful picture of how God is always with us, and how he very deliberately, I think, ushers us to heaven. And I think it's just a great message of hope that even if the ultimate result isn't healing, then there's still hope, you know, that there's a loving God that's right there waiting to take us to his bosom.
All kinds of uses for this book, obviously in the home, but cancer treatment centers and hospice organizations, hospitals, really would be a great help there.
Absolutely, and I'm really excited, Steve, to share that as I've been in this journey, especially in trying to promote the Love You Tree, I have learned that there's more than just selling a book here. You know, there truly is a ministry, and I have started reaching out to a number of hospitals and hospice organizations, and it's very exciting to me that without fail they have all embraced the Love You Tree book and are incorporating the story of the Love You Tree into their ministry to their patients. So it's just incredible, you know, how well received the book has been.
We've been listening to Dwayne Robinson. He is the author of The Love You Tree. Dwayne, what's the best way to get your book?
Well, it's available through all of the normal online retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I also have a website called loveyoutree.com, and the book can be purchased there, as well as through the publisher, Westbow Press.
Thank you so much, Dwayne, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate the opportunity to share the story with you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.